Hi, today is April 16th, 2023. This is Mobile View Podcast 456. I'm Todd Agassawart, a good friend, a good doctor as well. And first off,
good.
Yep, always good. Always good. First, I'd like to thank Kieran Garcia, Microsoft Senior Modern Work Specialist, for taking time to speak with me in Podcast 455. That was, I learned a lot of stuff, John, including the fact that I had some assumptions totally backwards. Like Microsoft Loop is preview is not available for business customers. Yeah, which makes no sense to me because it seems so business-like, you know, in terms of collaboration and all that. But that's the way it is. And in fact, he was telling me Designer and all those other things are currently not in preview mode, at least for the government folks that he works with. He specializes in, I think he handles a California account for governments for what Microsoft calls modern work. But anyway, thank you to Kieran. That was really educational for me, and especially since I understood some things backwards. I shouldn't say understood. I misunderstood some things.
I mean, with Microsoft, you didn't completely understand what they were going for? That's shocking to me. It seems like they're always so clear in everything they communicate. Their product names are always well thought out. Their releases seem to make sense in the way that they go. I mean, they've never backpedaled. They've never talked about issues for years that they just don't decide to fix. This is shocking, Tom. You're rocking my world.
I am so sorry to, you know, ruin your whole day. Possibly.
Well, I will say that in a few moments, I'm going to say that I'm actually encouraged by Microsoft for the first time in a long time, but we'll kind of get to that as we go.
All right. And something else, in the last podcast we were on together in 454, I think I mentioned that the collection of Steve Jobs speeches, interviews, and correspondence are being collected and are going to be made available for free in an ebook called Make Something Wonderful. And that is now available. So you can go to stevejobsarchive.com/book. And there are a couple of ways to get it free, including, the three ways. I think you can download it in some format that's, you know, readable by various kinds of readers. You can download it from the Apple Books for free. And you can also just read it online through your web browser, so you don't have to download anything. So I thought that was pretty cool. I only read the intro, so I haven't actually read Steve's words. I read the foreword, which is quite interesting in itself, even though it's very short.
Yeah, I downloaded it for Apple Books, so I will put it on my list. I am interested, as I mentioned in the last article or last podcast, I did read the Walter Isaacson book, so interested to see what else comes through.
Yeah, and these are Steve's own words, Mr. Jobs' own words, so this is not an interpretation of what he's saying, but what he actually said. So that was pretty interesting. Next up, related back to my talk with Kieran Garcia, I got my preview access to Microsoft Designer about a week ago, right after our podcast, actually. And so I was able to try it out. It's sort of a step above, as I said in my little blog article, that it's a step above Bing Creator. That said, you know, some things it seems to understand well and others is not so well when you have like compound thoughts or, you know, multiple sentences trying to describe what you wanted to produce. But it's still pretty interesting and it is much more editable. Well, not much more. It is editable, period. That's the designer part. Once you have it build something for you, you can go in and modify it yourself manually, which is sort of the best of both worlds, you know. So it's like, well, this isn't exactly what I want, and I'm going to put this in here. I'm going to replace this picture, that sort of thing. So have you tried any of the other stuff?
I
know you tried a few things.
I did play with Designer. I signed up for the beta and got in a couple of days ago. And this actually, you know, you combine that with Bing Chat and you combine it with the announcements about Copilot.
Yeah.
And this is where I said Microsoft is actually making me fairly hopeful for their future in a sense. It's, you know, Microsoft is always seemingly up and down. You wonder what their end goal is and if they can really just subsist on Windows and Office forever. But with Microsoft 365, it's always been hard for me to determine if Microsoft 365 for the home user makes much sense. It definitely makes sense for business, but, you know, what are the things that home users really need that Microsoft 365 would give them that Apple and Google won't give them?
Yeah.
And if they can keep producing these things, these quote-unquote killers. So obviously Desire is their argument for Canva.com mm-hmm. to kill Canva because yeah. it makes, you know, layout easy, and eventually I think would do that. Copilot will kill off things like Grammarly. Microsoft Editor inside of Word already kind of does everything Grammarly does to give you a writing analysis. So it's almost like they're taking a page out of the Apple playbook, and it's if you can't beat them, kill them. You know, figure out a way to do it better or build it into something and go off of that. So I'm cautiously optimistic that Microsoft is going to be producing some software things over the next few years that are actually interesting and engaging to hobbyists and home users that will keep them on the Microsoft train versus jump completely to iCloud, jump completely to Google.
Yeah. You know, I am wondering about the when Copilot for the Office components will be available, though, because, you know, I asked Kieran about it, and he says he didn't know. There's no roadmap he's aware of, and he's not dog-fooding it, because he said what he does is he only uses the services and products that his customers have access to, which is a smart idea. You know, I completely understand that philosophy. So it's like, I think I just read this morning or yesterday that Copilot for OneNote was announced. But the question, you know, it was just an announcement article, and, you know, it was some reputable blog just described the product announcement, at least. It basically, in restating the press release, which is, you know, the easy way to make a blog item. But it doesn't say anything about availability or, you know, preview mode or anything like that. So I'm just sort of sitting around and waiting right now. I will say one thing interesting. I think I can't remember if I tried Bard, or it was Google Bard or Microsoft Bing Copilot I tried. But I was just thinking the other day, you know, one of the problems I had back when I was working was finding mainframe resources. Mainframe programmers, quite frankly, all look like me, you know, kind of gray-haired and aged and so forth. You don't find new young mainframe people. And so, you know, what do we do? I don't have to do it anymore, but what do they do? As you know, they still need to run stuff until they can modernize, so to speak. And I wonder if it can pull, you know, information in from, you know, the web and answer questions about, like, you know, JCL job control languages stuff. And apparently it can. So that was sort of, you know, it might not, it's not going to replace a systems programmer, but it might augment a newbie who's been, you know, thrust into that position, whether desired or not. As you know, it happens sometimes in large enterprises. But yeah, it's a really interesting situation that I'm hoping. I'm going to take a look at it some more to see what else it knows about that. It'll be you know, something to talk about with some of my old coworkers and friends one of these days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the only AI that I've not played with yet is Bard. I'm still waiting on my Bard invitation. So.
Oh, really? That's surprising. My Bard, when I asked for the Bard access, it came like within a day. It was like really fast, really surprising.
I will take a look and see if maybe it slipped in
junk
somewhere.
Mail.
It would not be, yeah, it would not be surprising if Google forgot to actually let me know.
Another thing, you know, completely different subject is, you know, my desire to someday do a outdoor podcast. Maybe not, you know, walking in the woods or anything, but something not sitting in my home. Maybe sitting across a table from a friend or walking down the beach or whatever and just talking tech in that way. So I bought a very inexpensive, I think it was $27 on Amazon, lav microphone that is not Bluetooth, but what it does have is, well, okay, the microphone is not Bluetooth. Well, that's not true either. I'm not exactly sure. It looks like it has an adapter that is Bluetooth of some sort. Why it doesn't use the internal Bluetooth in the phones is unknown to me, but that's the way it is. And the neat thing about I guess it's a receiver. Yeah, because it doesn't send anything out. It only takes in. The interesting thing about this Bluetooth receiver is, A, it's completely configuration free. You plug it in and simply recognize, at least by iOS devices. And number two is it has some adapters, some port adapters, so you can use it with USB-A, USB-C, and Lightning. In other words, it's future-proof in the terms of, you know, using it with various devices, assuming USB-C doesn't disappear someday, which is what I was looking for. And it comes in a two-pack for, you know, under $30. So there's a one for me and one for, you know, whoever might be doing a podcast with in person outdoors. And so I thought that was pretty good. So that's all pretty good. And the problem is that the volume level is so low. And I've taken it off my collar and put it like 2 inches from my lips just to see if it was mic placement, you know, just not doing the mic placement thing. But the volume level is low regardless. Fortunately, I was able to use Audacity to fix the volume levels without causing distortion. So that the signal is clean, it's just really low. And I mentioned it in my Amazon review, and I gave it 3 stars. And I gave it 3 stars because the configuration was so good, the price is so good, and the audio is fixable. And so to me, you know, for under $30, it's kind of hard to complain, right? If it was a $200 microphone, I might, you know, set it back or something. But for $30, maybe not. To their credit, the vendor, Absigi, I think, I'll put it in the show note, in the blog notes later. To their credit, they actually reached out to me when they saw my review and my issues. And I sent them, you know, like Fourier waves, wave captured from Audacity to show them the volume differences between using the microphone built into the iPad Mini 6 in my test example and their microphone. You know, same device to record, and with the microphone actually was further away from my mouth for the iPad, and the volume level was like literally orders of magnitude, like logarithmic orders of magnitude. So, you know, they tried to make it right. So what can we do? And I tell them, well, here are the problems. I think that, you know, basically it's just a microphone because it's not the windshield. The foam windshield does not cause audio volume loss. I tested that too. So they offered me a full refund. I'm not sure I'm going to take them up on that because, like, I'm going to use the mic, you know. I don't want to buy a $200 mic for something I do twice a year or something.
Yep.
But I thought that was real good, and I'll put their name in the show in the blog notes so that that's reflected as a vendor that, hey, you know, the product didn't quite meet my expectations, but hey, they tried to make it right. You got to respect that.
And it's good enough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And sometimes, speaking of good enough, you know, I'm a huge fan of Python. I wrote a little blog item about how I switched from Perl to Python around 2002. And I used Perl a lot for over a decade since it was practically new for, you know, plus 10 years or so. And it was a great tool. It was a little sluggish to actually do production stuff. So I often used it mostly for, you know, doing just sort of a rapid prototyping and then rewriting it in C or something. But Python let me run fast enough that I didn't have to do rewrites. I could just, you know, prototype and refine and run, which was perfect, right? So, but people say, well, I got to download the Python to my system and install it and blah, 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 blah. So RaspberryPi.org, their sort of charitable arm, has a free code editor, and it's going to add other languages aside from Python in the future, but it's starting with Python because that's kind of the language of Linux. And you can actually, you know, code and run for free right in their environment. Looked pretty cool. I haven't tried it yet. I logged in, or, you know, I went to the website and I verified that it ran on my browser, which I didn't doubt, but that it was really there. And it's in beta testing, so I really encourage everyone to go take a look at this editor and Python, because Python is cool. Do you use Python, John? I know you write in a lot of languages.
I do. Python occasionally. What I end up writing in more, well, recently it's been a variety of different things. I haven't done much new coding in a long time. The most code I've ever written has probably been PHP. But that's just because I end up having to run things in a LAMP stack, and it's just easier for me to write it that way. But definitely, I like a lot of different languages. Python, there's just a few things about it that have always annoyed me, but I have a feeling if I were to use it more, I would not get annoyed by them. I'm not a huge fan of languages that enforce indention.
Oh, I like it. That's the best part.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird like that, but overall, I like Python in that it's very extensible. So
yeah,
just like PHP, there's a library for pretty much everything in Python, which is
good. Yeah. Absolutely. Actually, and I'll be the exact, I'll be the devil, not just the devil's advocate, I'll just be the advocate for a force structure, visual structure Force Visual Structure is awesome because it really helps you decode too. Yeah, it needs to be indented, and that helps you to see better and decode better. So and that was one of my favorite things. That and the lack of semicolons, which, you know, the Forced Visual Structure, allows you to do without. So I was really, really happy with I haven't programmed it in a while, to be honest, but for the years and years that I did write stuff in Python, it was just a joy to use. And I was just using it VI, by the way. I didn't even have like a code editor to help me. So, that's just because I'm old school. There were already code editors. I just didn't use them. Maybe I used Emacs once in a while. Okay, the next one is, I don't know whether to be sad or not, because I really don't mean paper magazines anymore, but Harry McCracken, a very well-known technology writer and editor. Many of you have probably read his stuff over the decades in various big magazines. And by big, I mean, popular ones, not just Computer Shopper, which was just huge. But apparently there are only two technology paper magazines left out there on the newsstands, if you can find a newsstand. Let's see, what were they? And there were kind of ones I kind of knew about, by the way. Oh, Maximum PC and Mac Life. And I remember both of them because they used to, both of these magazines used to come with CD-ROM discs with, freeware, shareware, code examples, photos. I don't think the articles were on the CDs. So that was always kind of interesting to me that they would ship with the CDs and you could try stuff that they were writing about. I really thought that was kind of neat. But anyway, both of them are ceasing paper production this month, April 2023. And Harry says that they both date back to 1996, so they've been around, quarter of a century now, plus. So it's I'm not sad. I guess I'm sort of just maybe wistful, because I really enjoyed paper technology magazines. I remember, I remember subscribing to Byte magazine for many years, and this one is probably before your time, but there used to be a magazine called Creative Computing. It may have been the only paper magazine I knew of back then. I think it predates Byte. And, I remember subscribing to that and reading it and picking up as new magazines came, PC Magazine and PC World, the upstarts started appearing. I remember buying those off the newsstand and taking them on airplane rides. They're great sort of comfort reading.
What was your absolute favorite computer magazine for whatever reason?
Oh, I think it's got to be Byte. Mm-hmm. It's got to be Byte.
Mine, I can't get too sad about this because mine ceased publication 20 years ago now. was PC Computing.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Back in the 90s, yeah. PC Computing was probably my favorite computer magazine. It had a reverent tone to it. I used to love the notebook torture tests that they did, freezing and baking and throwing laptops around to see what would survive and things like that. So I remember I even had their renewal gift for a number of years was a really cheap canvas briefcase. It was, literally soft and you zipped around and it cost them, I'm sure, all of $5. As their renewal gift, and had PC Computing silk screened out in blue or red. But I had two or three of those around because it was the same gift every year that you got for renewal.
I think I subscribed to it, but I don't remember getting that. That sounds nice.
Oh yeah,
you just took that from Shipped in Hawaii.
It was not a great bag, but it was definitely indicative of that time. So I do miss those. Now, if I have to pick up a magazine, I do pick up the one that he mentions is still out there, which is 2600 The Hacker Quarterly.
Is that still out?
Yeah, I have not bought a paper copy in a number of years. Maybe it's out, but I'll get a subscription or I'll read, an anthology of them. But
yeah.
I do find 2600 to be interesting when I have time to read it.
I remember that. That used to actually be on the newsstands locally. I remember seeing it. Yeah, I thought it was very... I thought it was kind of funny because it was kind of subversive,
Oh, yeah. I remember being at it was right around, I guess, 2010 or so. I was at a bookstore and there was a issue of 2600 and I picked it up and just happened to flip it open. And the first page I went to was all about Speed Queen laundry. Basically the systems to reprogram a Speed Queen to emulate the coin insertion. So you need to go down to your laundry room in your apartment building and just hit a couple of buttons and get three washes out of it. I thought it is probably amazing to me how this is the only thing on this newsstand right now that you would that would pay for itself if you, you know, were less
yeah.
You
yeah.
pick up this magazine and over the next 2-3 months you'll pay for it just in saving orders here and
there. Yeah. Well, it's definitely, I was going to pass this, but I guess this is still around. It is the dark arts of technology.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I have two stories about Byte. So one of my favorite things about Byte was, I think most people know him as a science fiction author, Jerry Pournelle, but he was also a prolific technology writer. And he wrote the Chaos Manor column in Byte every month, which was in first person and very personal, very different from, you know, pretty much any other article type you would see in technology magazines or anything else. It basically predated blogs when you think about it, because it was always first person. I did this, I did that. This is the problem I saw. And it was really fun to read. And you have obviously, you know, he's a successfully published science fiction author. So his writing style is really easy to read and enjoyable. The other thing, or I guess three things, the other thing is that I met one of my lifelong friends through Byte magazine. I was sitting there reading a copy of Byte magazine one day when I was in grad school. It was about algorithms for anagrams, you know, which are always kind of fun to do. And I saw the byline and said, hey, this guy's in grad school at the same university I am. So I looked him up. I found his email on campus. I said, hey, I read your Byte magazine article. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for writing it. And, you know, if you're ever around, this is where my little office is. And, you know, drop on by. So you did. And so the late, great Mike Morton, he passed away just a few years ago. But he had quite a career after that. In fact, I think and I take credit for introducing Next computers. And he often said that, actually, because I brought Next in to campus. I was also working at the time on campus to show the Next computer to faculty and students. And he saw it there first. And he actually went to work for them for a while, I think. Then he went to work for Apple and Google and Sonos, I think. So he had quite an interesting career, quite interesting. Mike Morton, great guy. And third is, although I never, unlike my friend Mike, I never wrote a published article in Byte magazine, the paper version, I was a regular writer contributing writer for the online brief rebirth of Byte as online only. So that was lots of fun to do. And I think I was actually on a conference call with Jerry Pournelle, which was he wouldn't know me for Adam, but it was a small thrill for me. So I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, the last of the magazines, it's too bad. You know, there's something interesting. You know, the online articles disappear. Almost all my old online articles are now gone and unretrievable. Maybe they're on archive.org, I don't know. But paper stuff that you happen, if you're a hoarder like me and you keep them around, it's kind of fun to relook at them after decades and decades before you toss them. Finally, in my case, finally toss them out.
Very true.
Yeah. And I think you're asking if I still read anything now that are online. Apple News Plus, which is a subscription, and I have Apple One because of you, includes that. There are a couple of technology magazines in there online. I think PC World is there and a few others that I do occasionally read. So, you know, it's good to see that tech writers still have a venue, although it's probably not as lucrative as it once was when paper magazines were a big thing and you could actually make a profit from them. If not from the articles, selling the magazine, certainly from the ads, which is, I'm sure, how they made most of their money. So anything you still read aside from 2600?
Nothing really. Like we talked a little bit about through Apple One, and I do that too, where I'll go occasionally and see what they've got, but I don't have anything that I regularly.
Yeah, same. It's just checking the blogs and using TechMeme to find stuff that I'm looking for. You know, the last thing I wanted to, that on my topic list that I wanted to note before I ask you how you've been, since I haven't seen you in 2 weeks, is I think I mentioned the other week that I finally upgraded my cable modem because my ISP was pretty insistent that, you know, I started getting text messages, You know, you've got a really old cable modem that you really should replace. So I did. And then right after that, I got another text message saying, hey, we're detecting some signal strength problems. Give us a call and we'll send a technician out. And a technician came just a few days later. By the way, my ISP, which is Spectrum, has a 1-hour window now, which is sort of amazing. You know, it's not this wait all day thing. So that was pretty cool. And he mucked around, replaced some connectors. And then said, yep, your signal strength looks good now. And I'm getting about, the modem itself is rated at 500 megabits down, but I'm getting about 580, which is kind of neat. But more surprisingly, you know, I finally replaced my old Netgear router with a TP-Link. I kind of like that brand. A TP-Link Wi-Fi 6 router. I didn't buy a 6E because it turns out the only 6E, I think I told you, only 6E device I have is my M2 iPad 2. iPad Pro, right? Everything else doesn't support 6E. So I said, why spend another $100? And so I paid like $70 or $80. I got a Wi-Fi 6 TP-Link. And you know what? I'm getting wireline speeds. I'm getting 500 plus megabits per second down on newer devices. Some older devices like my Pixel phones, they kind of poop out at about 280, which to me is not bad. So I'm pretty impressed by that. And even better, when did I buy? I bought it, I think, in November or December 2020. I bought an Amazon Eero, you know, their mesh router.
Yep.
I only bought one because I just wanted to have a backup Wi-Fi router during the pandemic, you know, in case mine died. All of a sudden, I couldn't go out to a store and buy one. So I got an Eero, which I could never get to work, you know, because I could never get it to send the authorization, whatever. And I tried it again the other day, and it still didn't send a text message correctly to me, and my text messaging works fine, thank you. And I did type the right number twice, but I did find an email from them. I said, well, let's try email. So I said, and it ended up in my junk folder, which I found. So after that, I turned on my Eero, which is only Wi-Fi AC versus AX, so let's call it 5 versus 6. And I, you know, if I'm like 2 feet away, I can get 500 plus megabits down. But if I get any further, it's a little slower. But, you know, that's not bad for an older technology, a 3-plus-year-old technology. And if I ever wanted to, one of the things I recently learned is that the newer Echo Dots, I think the Echo Dot 4th and 5th generation and Echo Dot clock, all serve as Wi-Fi mesh extenders.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is these mesh extenders poop out at about 100 megabits per second down. But that's not bad, you know?
Yeah, that is not. I'm looking at what I'm able to get. I'm right next to my router, and I have fairly recent hardware. And on wireless, I can get around 170 down and around 50 or so up.
Yeah.
And that's fine for a device that I don't need to use that often. Now, when I go physically in, you know, if I jack in over Ethernet, right, I can get around 800 or so. Right. So I have a gig internet plan, but it is crazy how we're fast approaching the time where the actual speed that you get is, again, good enough, to go back to what, a phrase that I used earlier in the podcast.
Yeah.
And when it's good enough, you're not always going, well, what can I change or what can I do differently? It's just, I guess this is fine. And I guess there's probably a lot of companies out there that are very annoyed by that because it means people are not upgrading the way that they should when it's, this is fine. I mean, that's why I still have an iPad from 2018. That's my daily driver, iPad Pro, and my Apple Watch is a Series 6, and my iPhone is a 13. I'm the only thing I'm on the current generation of is the iPad Mini, and that's just because they never release iPad Mini. So you should be on the current generation of an iPad Mini for several years without needing to upgrade yourself in the relative realm of the latest. I mean, the iPad Mini right now is going up 579 days since it's up.
Wow, has it been that long?
But we still think of it as fairly recent because
I do.
Previously the record had been 922.
That's right, between 4 and 5, right?
Yeah, yeah. And 911 between 5 and 6. Yeah. So, 500 days, and it's funny because Mac Rumors Buyer's Guide is saying, oh, be cautious, a new one might be coming out. Yeah, sometime in the next 2 years, it might. But I suspect we still have plenty of time before a new one comes out.
Yeah, and you know, your good enough philosophies really make sense. Even the 6 and 6E, you know, as I said, I only have one 6E device. I said, why should I spend almost $200 for a 6E Wi-Fi router when I can get a Wi-Fi 6 for 80, let's say, which is what I did. And a friend of mine, who I consider to be an expert in this, he was the Spectrum Wireless General Manager, I think, before he retired. And I talked to him about, you know, what I should buy and what he uses and all that. He said, well, you should get a 6E because then you'll future-proof. But I thought, you know, Wi-Fi routers poop out. So by the time this one poops out, the 6E will be the previous generation. I'll finally have some 6E devices in a couple of years, maybe, you know, more than one. And then it'll be like less than 100, and then I'll buy it then. And to be honest, if I can get wireline speeds at Wi-Fi 6, I don't really see the need for 6E. And my wireline is, like I said, is rated 500 megabits. So I'm getting, you know, plus on my, you know, I'm getting better than advertised for my downstream. So I'm not going to be grumpy about this. I'm pretty happy. I am now kind of curious about getting a new Echo Dot just to see what how the mesh works, though. And in fact, I think the TP-Link I bought can also have a mesh satellite. So I have a very tiny home, so there's not a lot of need for that.
Yeah.
But, you know. Sometimes I go outside in the lanai or something, and the signal does degrade there, so that might be sort of interesting. All righty, so how have you been? How was your, you know, Easter weekend and all that? Any technology items?
It was good. I've not had much technology items to think about lately. I'm still looking for some new tech that would be interesting to buy, and I'm not finding much. And it's sort of, I'm starting to get that itch where it's, I want to be thing to play with, but I really can't justify it.
Yeah,
I did buy some Apple Watch bands off of eBay this morning that were used, but our Apple OEM watch bands in my size for the Solo Loop. So I guess that'll give me some wear options. I never used to change my watch band very often. And if you find, like me, that you have a bunch of watch bands but you just never think to change them, I definitely suggest getting a cat that likes to steal your Apple Watch. Because now, whenever I put my Apple Watch on charge, I take the watch band off so that the cat can't steal it and run away with it and put holes in my watch bands. So that means that I end up having an opportunity once or twice a day to swap watch bands because I'm already taking it off anyway. So I definitely recommend that. You find that you have all these wonderful watch fans and you're not using them, just get a cat that tries to steal them.
You know, that said, you know, I bought a Fitbit Charge 5, I think, last year after my Fitbit Charge 4 bit the dust. And the watch band that came with it was horrible, as all the Fitbit watch bands are. The default rubberized ones are all terrible. And so I bought a third-party metal magnetic one, which is my preferred, you know, the infinitely adjustable ones, but it didn't even clip to the Fitbit Charge 5. It literally fell off. It would not clip. And one clip fell off, and other clip was almost impossible to take off. So I just abandoned that altogether. And I spent, you know, like $50 on a Fitbit branded, also infinitely adjustable, but instead of magnetic, it is Velcro, and the Velcro is terrible, especially for a $50 watch band. So I'm going to go complain to Fitbit. I suspect Fitbit's going to disappear in another year or two now that it's owned by Google, and I'm not sure I want to buy a Pixel watch, so this might be my last Fitbit. Also, Google/Fitbit turned off the community challenges and stuff, so one of my main reasons for having a Fitbit, which was to, you know, remain in contact with a group of friends that a friend of mine was arranging daily, you know, walking challenges to see who took the most steps, can't be done. So I have no incentive, really, except that the Fitbit still takes better count of steps than my Apple Watch, in my opinion, and it has a much better battery.
Well, and I'm wondering if I'm about to stop taking as many steps because I've started recently, instead of just going for walks in the morning, I started doing a little bit more jogging because jog or run a little bit between, you know, 30 minutes of that versus 45 or 50 minutes. And sometimes it's just, well, I'd rather have that extra 20 minutes somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, but that means my step counts will go down and my mile walk will go down. So, but it's all relative. It's interesting how you got to mix things up because after almost 3 years now of walking about 3 miles a day.
Yeah.
I could be okay with 2.5 miles.
Yeah. And that's one session, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My to give you an idea of what Apple has to target me for, my April challenge in Apple Fitness is walk at least 4.3 miles per day for 14 days of the month.
Why 4.3?
It's just that is probably what it's looking at me and going, that's a reasonable.
Oh, it's a challenge to you.
Yeah, that's my challenge.
Where does it do that? In the fitness app?
Yeah, if you go to fitness.
Okay, I'm looking.
Go to the little badges at the bottom of you know, the awards and all that. It should tell you what your April challenge is.
I see it. April challenge.
But what's yours?
I don't even understand it. It just says, earn this award by reaching... Oh, no, now I understand. Earn this award by reaching your daily move goal 2 times. So...
Well, there you go. Yeah, but that's so far. Especially since you could just set your daily move goal at 300 calories, 100 calories, or whatever, and then go for it.
It must know I'm old and decrepit, because I just looked at my March challenge, which I apparently achieved without knowing. My March challenge is, nice work, Todd. You closed your exercise ring 1 time. Now I feel kind of bad.
Yeah, the problem when you move more is that those goals tend to get more and more ambitious. I'm trying to remember what I have not made them every single month. They've started to get to the point where it's like, yeah, that's just not going to happen. I'm trying to see if I can look up what the previous ones were. Let's see. Last month, I did make it. It was burn at least 734 calories a day 14 times. February, it was do 20 walking workouts in a single month. January, it was double your move goal 3 times in a single month. Yeah, and I did not earn it for December, so I don't know what December's was.
Yeah, and it doesn't show you more than 2 months, it looks like, huh?
Well, it'll show you all the ones you've earned if you go back to monthly challenges. Maybe you've only earned 2?
Well, actually, I did. Let me go back and look, it doesn't show me maybe it doesn't show me monthly challenges, but it does have longest move streak, perfect weeks where, you know, you do reach move goal every day of a week. Apparently, I did this 41 times, so that was nice. Although it's been a while since I did it. I have never had a perfect week for exercise. Interesting. All right. And I had one perfect month.
Since you said you were missing any kind of competition stuff, I sent you an invite to share data so you can, you know.
I see it.
We can talk about walking and all of that.
Okay, I see it, but how do I? I don't see your actual invitation. I just see a one appearing in my sharing, but let's see who it is. I guess it's you.
Oh, I would assume. Unless someone else magically happens to.
Huh. Yeah. Well, I will wait for. Oh, wait. I got it now. This is exciting podcasting, folks, because, I see it.
Oh, yeah.
Except I have accepted.
The best at us discussing things that cannot be visually seen.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Wow. You're already at 91% today.
Oh, and no wonder your goal is always, well, now that I see what you're set at, that's why your monthly goal is just do it twice.
Yeah. Why? What am I set at? I don't even know.
740 calories.
Calories. Yeah.
Active move.
Yeah. Is that a lot?
That's good. Yeah, that's pretty high.
I don't think I said that. But yeah, I think my Fitbit days are numbered. And it's kind of sad because I've been using it for, since 2010, I think, the original Fitbit.
Yeah.
You know? So it's continuously, which is pretty cool, I think.
Well, we'll get you over to Apple Watch and then you can, then they'll kill it in just 10 years and then you have to worry about it there either.
Well, I'll be dead by then, so.
You're not allowed to die until you finish cleaning all the dead sweets out of your house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Once they're finally gone, yeah. Well, I would keep a few around. It'll keep you on this mortal plane, you know, longer.
I remember somebody saying, as I said, I'm not religious, but I like this saying. Somebody once told me, God put me on earth to do a certain number of things, and I'm so far behind, I'm never going to die.
Yeah, good way to think about it.
Any rate, this has been Mold Views Podcast 456. Thank you very much. Thanks, John, as usual, and we'll talk to you next time.